A white man? No!
Up as a white man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap.
Yes.
I hesitate to say this is like one of those like bugs in amber, you know, like fossils that you find.
Yeah.
Because it is a moment in time. These things were once considered socially acceptable sentiments.
Yeah, it's this one's just exhausting.
This is one of the worst as far as this hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
But we are discussing A Rite of Passage, which originally aired April 14th, 2010.
Mm-hmm. And the title makes no sense.
Right?
Not even a little bit.
I mean, it's... I could try to reach for something, but why bother? They obviously didn't.
No. They did not put the amount of thought into it that it would take to make a connection between the title and the plot.
They did not put the amount of thought, period. I mean, there's no thoughts here.
No thought was had. So this one starts with a man who is running through like some scrub landscape pursued by someone on an ATV.
And it is, they are intense shots of this ATV. Yes. Like,
he's really going motocross. All out.
Yeah.
Motocross style, yeah. The man is pleading for his life in Spanish as the ATV rider attacks him with a machete.
Yeah.
Gross.
You're like, hey, any redneck on an ATV is a scary sight. He's got like a skull mask on. He does like the circles around him so the dirt and dust is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's very intimidating. And it's the middle of the night. Did you say that part?
I don't think I did. No. Yeah, this would be weird in the daylight. there's some teenagers riding. I think they're teenagers, young adult-ish. Yeah. I don't know. But they were riding bikes through a town. One of them crashes into a stack of styrofoam coolers. And when they fall over, we see that one of them contains the man's disembodied head.
Yeah. And they're right in front of a police station. You can see in the background, which is a bold move.
Yes.
Bold place to dump your heads.
So JJ lets us know that there were actually three heads found in Terlingua, Texas. They were killed at different times, but were all recently decapitated. There's evidence that two of the three bodies had been buried. And the team wonders why this killer suddenly needed to display these bodies that he'd clearly had for some time.
Yeah.
Which is just disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Garcia tells them that the heads in the coolers MO matches drug cartel activity in Mexico, and that the DEA has asked the BAU to look into it because they're not sure whether or not this is connected, because you know how much law enforcement agencies like to lean on each other
and
shared jurisdiction.
Exactly.
Over cases.
Yeah. There's a lot of clear communication between these agencies. Yeah. So this makes a lot of sense.
Turf wars never happened.
Yeah.
So the victims were two males and one female. All were Hispanic and none of them had been identified. JJ points out that there is a large illegal population in Terlingua. Morgan suggests that it was a political statement by local groups taking it upon themselves to patrol the border. And Rossi is very quick to specifically defend the Minutemen and say that they'd never murder anyone because it would be bad for their image.
I was like, oh man, this episode's going to go south so fast.
Yeah. It was funny. I was like giving my boyfriend a brief synopsis and I just started describing it and he lived in Texas for like 12 years. And as soon as I like said, like, you know, it's like vigilantes and he's like, oh, like the Minutemen, just rolled his eyes. And I was like, but yeah, Rossi's very quick to defend them.
Like, oh, quit being such a white man, Rossi.
Yeah.
You're like, better than this.
Were you afraid that like 100 people were going to get mad at your show if you insulted them? Like, come on. So they, suspect the killer is a local because you would have to have specific knowledge of how to put the coolers in front of a police station without being seen.
I don't know. So
that makes me want to just go to random cities or towns and just like leave boxes of cookies in yeah. front of the police station.
See if anyone notices.
See if anyone notices. Yeah. I bet they won't, especially in a tiny, tiny town like that.
Yeah, because like, as I could go soon leave- to see, there's not much of a police force inside this police station.
No.
This is as rural as it gets.
Yeah. So like I could go to our county deputies. I don't know where it is, but I could find the county sheriff's office, I'm sure, and like leave some cookies and the deputies wouldn't notice that I had done it.
Yep, exactly.
And I am a local and I don't know where the sheriff's office is.
You don't spend a lot of time going to the sheriff's office? Weird.
I can't even imagine where it would be. So Prentice points out that the southwestern border of Texas provides miles of desert and potential victims trying to cross the border each day, which Morgan says is a serial killer's perfect storm.
Yeah, an endless supply of anonymous victims. Like, yes.
And they've got this map of Texas where there's just a line of that one part of the border of Texas, and the line is just blinking. And it's just, that was weird. I'm like... What program are you using that does that? Right? Isn't that weird that that would exist?
It's a specialty program they made.
The
just
Garcia
for
just made just to do this.
Like this.
Yeah.
Man, I don't even know who our sheriff is.
I know who it is only because we just voted and he was the only person on,
on the ballot. See, it didn't even stick with me because it was uncontested.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So then we get our first... quote, a lion's work hours are only when he's hungry. Once he's satisfied, the predator and prey live peacefully together. Chuck Jones.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't, who's Chuck Jones? Isn't he, yeah, he's the guy that draws Bugs Bunny. Is it the same?
Really?
Is it the same Chuck Jones? I didn't notice because I cut and paste the quotes in, you know, and I never really paid attention to it. Now that I'm reading it, I'm like, wait a minute. He's the Looney Tunes animator.
I really hope it's the same
Is
Chuck Jones.
Is that a quote from him? Weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, Rossi points out that this killer could have been active for years and only recently decided to announce himself. JJ says that the town's location makes it a perfect narco-trafficking hub, and Garcia tells us all about the Lugo cartel out of California, which I guess killed a bunch of people while they were distributing cocaine and heroin. Mm. So now they think that this cartel is responsible for all of the black tar heroin that's appeared in Terlingua recently.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know how that differs from... Is there white tar? That's the other kind of heroin.
Any heroin experts out there?
Yeah. So the cartel, we learn, killed two DEA agents last year, and Morgan's like, we got to protect ourselves, and pulls out just the biggest gun I have ever seen. It seems really unnecessarily large.
It is.
And yeah. Hotch is like, please don't shoot that on the plane. Reed says that he is not sure that he's qualified to use a weapon like that, and Hotch assures him that he is absolutely not. It would have been better if he was like reaching out and Hotch like slapped his hand away. He's like, no, not for you. So Hotch tells Prentice and Morgan to make some headway with the locals, which should be easy. And Rossi and Reed are assigned to go check out the heads. Yes.
The ME has the heads waiting for you.
Yes.
I was like, gross.
Hotch and JJ arrive at the police station and are greeted by members of the Lugo cartel who are just standing in a line looking very intimidating.
Yep.
One of the members tells Hotch that they're legal citizens exercising their right to a peaceful assembly. And the sheriff's deputy tells them all about Omar Morales, the local leader of the cartel who was picked up this morning. The sheriff, Sheriff Ruiz?
Yeah.
I didn't write down her first name. She tells them that she is ignoring the cartel members, doesn't believe they have anything to do with any of this. And she tells them about a large number of immigrants who have gone missing in the last per month, almost like one per week.
Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. So she clearly like has a good relationship with the people and they're like telling her about it. And it's another case where somebody's like keeping track of all these like anonymous people that are going missing, but has no real proof that any of it is
and
happening.
That nobody else cares about.
Yeah.
Did you like Tough Guy Hotch and his standoff with the cartel?
I did.
There's lots of staring, smoldering stares.
Yeah. They're like, it reminded me of in 30 Rock when they're like, should we solve it with the talking like this contest? But it's like a staring like this contest, but with that voice.
Yes. I was just waiting for Hotch to give up and walk around them. I really wanted that to happen.
The best is they're just like staring for a while. And then that like woman who's like 5'2", the sheriff, just walks in. She's like, move out of the way.
Yeah. And they do. And they all listen.
Just like, we're done. We're done here. Get out of my way. So Reed tells us that contrary to popular belief, decapitation is actually pretty hard.
I was like, I'm sorry, what? That's a popular, really difficult.
It seems difficult to me.
My initial reaction is, wow, it's really hard to cut off someone's head. It's really hard to stab someone even one time.
Yeah. Like if somebody was like, hey, how hard do you think it is to decapitate someone? My answer would be
really
pretty hard.
Really hard. Especially with just a machete.
I know. I can't cut anything with a machete.
I can barely cut like a potato with a knife. Have you ever tried to cut a spaghetti squash? Can you imagine trying to decapitate someone?
I know how hard it is to cut up a watermelon. Yeah. And that's difficult.
Am I just using the wrong kind of knives? Like I have to put a spaghetti squash in the microwave first to soften it before I can cut it.
If it was super easy to cut someone's head off, why would they have invented a guillotine? Like, you wouldn't need to invent.
Right? It was a special job that someone had to cut people's heads off.
A very strong person.
They were gigantic. Yeah. Like if you're the most gigantic man in medieval times, you have one job option and it's cutting people's heads off. This isn't any Joe Schmo here. Yeah. I mean, popular belief. Whose popular belief is this?
We need to like put up a poll on Instagram. Yes. How hard do you think it is to decapitate someone? Hard, really hard, or impossible? Yes. So the ME explains that one of the victims had cataracts that would have made him almost completely blind, but there wasn't really anything notable about the others, except that they were older. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, oh, but wait, no, actually they all inhaled sand before they died. Like that seems notable. And also, how would you know what they had inhaled if you only have their heads? If it was just in their mouths?
Oh, right.
But then also, if it was, they were also buried.
Did they recover the rest of the bodies?
No. They only have the heads.
So how would they, I mean, would their nasal passages be covered in sand or something?
But maybe, I mean, you'd but
think
if
they would be full from being buried.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of them. You would be able to tell if there was like sand and stuff. But the other ones were buried. So how would you know?
I don't know. I'm not a medical examiner or a writer for Criminal Minds.
No thought was put into this. But Rossi assumes it was because they were all running before they died, like through the desert.
And well, so here's the thing, too, that I wondered. Okay, sure, from running through the desert. But also, how do they know they weren't buried alive? Again, they only have the heads. Wouldn't you forcefully breathe in sand if you were buried alive?
You would think so.
So I didn't understand how they ruled that out so quickly. And I was like, it must be from running.
Yeah. Like, and the jump to conclusions, Matt.
Right. Like, we know it's from running because we watched the guy running away. But you guys didn't
You wouldn't
see
know that.
That. Yeah. There's a lot of options to explore here.
So then we speak to Omar Morales. Hotch is talking to him and asking him about whether or not he decapitated the bodies. Mm-hmm. And Omar is like, no, I wouldn't do that. And I know it wouldn't be me, or like it wasn't one of my cartel people, because we would have like totally disemboweled the body and cut off the hands and cut out the tongue and sent the different body parts to different people. And you're like, wow, this is a lot of information, sir.
This
Thank
is
you.
How we know you're lying, because you're giving too many details. That's a bad lie.
But Omar tells Hotch that he is looking for Santa Muerte, the saint of death. Mm-hmm. Ruiz tells them that Santa Muerte is a superstition, like a superstitious character, but like obviously based on someone real, because people are like actually concerned. So the UNSUP watches a group of people running through the desert with night vision goggles, and one of them falls behind, and you see the UNSUP's like gaze linger on them.
Yeah.
It's very ominous.
The weak, preying on the weakest of the pack.
Everything is terrifying through night vision goggles.
That's true.
So Sheriff Ruiz leaves her house the next morning to find that man's head on her fence.
Yeah.
Just and shoved onto the fence post.
You know what? She's not as surprised as I would have been to find a head at my house.
No. She's like, it's like an inconvenience.
Yeah. She's like, oh, damn.
Not again.
Head. Right.
Hotch is like, this seems personal. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a head on my fence.
Yeah.
Obviously, sir. She says it's personal because she's the only person that cares about investigating these murders. And Hotch thinks that it is likely that she has spoken to this unsub and that he is ready to deliver the profile.
And I was like, how? We have gotten literally zero information. Yeah. But we do.
Yeah. The sheriff. Oh, wait. No. Yeah. Now they do the profile. Yeah. Sorry. I forgot to write profile, which is what I normally do, so I know.
We're searching for a personality type called a human predator. In the classic sense, a hunter. All the victims we've been able to conclusively tie to him have been older and handicapped in some way. This suggests he waits for someone to separate from the pack, looks for the weak. Like a lion or something? Someone asks. These deputies
are... Like a predator, but a human.
Yes.
And if you're not sure what a predator is, ask a kindergartner.
Not like a collector, but not like the kind of collection you would think of, right? It's another one of these kinds of explanations.
Exactly.
They're like, except a lion hunts food. This type of predator hunts power. It's not about
humans.
And also humans. It's not about serving a need, and everything is a means to that end. I mean, maybe he is hunting for food. We haven't found these bodies yet. All we've got are heads, right? Yeah. We know nothing. We also believe he makes the victims run through the desert in order to weaken them. He may not be capable of taking them on in their strongest state, despite age or infirmity. This suggests that he's possibly handicapped in some way himself. And I was like, oh no, how could they make an episode about illegal immigration worse?
Yeah.
They're about to. Certainly weak, maybe small, even thin. An unsub who creates chaos and then attacks typically carries this through to all aspects of his life. He is unlikely to be in a relationship. If he is, it's an abusive one. This guy gets off on control. He will have tried to stay very close to the investigation. He will be very aware that the sheriff has started looking into the missing illegal immigrants. How do we know this? It's probably why the decapitation started, as a countermeasure. He's trying to throw off the investigation. It's typical in an organized offender like this. Carrie Stainer, the Yosemite killer, drove more than 50 miles to dump cigarette packs and driver's license at intersections to throw off suspicion.
Irrelevant information.
Had to throw someone in there. Start by looking back at everyone you've talked to in connection with these killings. We need to start with people who are familiar with the immigrant journey. Like who? Advocates? None of them will talk to us. We've tried. Well, the
I wonder why.
Yeah.
It's because you guys are dicks about all these people.
Well, the coyotes want this guy caught. He's hurting their business. And if the advocates really care about the immigrants, they're going to want to find whoever is responsible as well. And then they realize they know someone who could help from an outreach program called Libertad.
Yes. So one of the sheriff's deputies reluctantly takes the team to go meet Richard Corral, who's one of the advocates. Corral walks with a limp, but he is an advocate for the, it's so funny every time it's just funny how much language has changed because like literally every time they would say illegal, my brain would go undocumented.
Yeah, I know.
like every single time. Yeah. But yeah, Prentice assures them that they are not here about immigration. It's like, why would he believe you?
Yeah. Why would he trust you?
Yeah. He's like, no, we don't care about that.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, you're the FBI, so.
Yeah, no, thank you. You can leave. And actually, if people see him talking to them.
Then they're not going to trust him.
Yeah.
Because they don't care that it's not ICE or if it, I don't know if it was ICE at that point, but
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but whatever.
It doesn't matter. I still wouldn't trust them.
Yeah, no. I mean, especially knowing what I know about the BAU now, I wouldn't trust them.
Yeah. Corral says that his clients are terrified of this man and explains how people cross the border and then are exploited by the coyotes and their like safe houses and everything once they get there. It's just so shitty.
Yeah. And there's this horrible like fight between Richard Corral and the deputy that brings them there.
Yeah. He's just being a huge dick.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we get it. You're not a fan of immigration. Calm down, deputy. So, Sheriff Ruiz has a big photo album of murder news clippings from her old job when she was a cop in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And she bemoans the fact that there is nowhere safe for murderers because she came here to, like, have a slower pace.
Yeah.
And got a job in cartel country, apparently.
It's not where, like, I would have chosen to go. But
any research before you moved here about what kind of crime you would be investigating? But sure. They ask her about, they're like, so where do we find these safe houses, these hotbeds of criminal activity?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know.
That's the whole point.
Because if I did, they would have been shut down already. Yeah. And they're like, it's like the one where they were like explaining how they were like looking for like the people who are trafficking babies. Mm-hmm. And like the social worker was like, that's not how any of this works. And they're like, oh, okay.
Like, shouldn't you guys know this? Why am I explaining this to the FBI?
Yeah. Obviously,
Oh, here's a list of all the safe houses where we know these undocumented immigrants are being abused and taken advantage of. But we just keep the list here and we don't intervene. It's none of our business.
Yeah.
What?
It's like, just look through your database of serial killers. Well, just free and active serial killers that you have all the information on. Like,
here's the thing,
sometimes
too.
If you're doing something illegal, you keep it a secret from the cops.
Yeah. How big of a town do you think Terlingua, Texas is?
I think I looked it up and it is very small.
The population of Terlingua, Texas is 110 people.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I was like, I feel like it was like less than 500 people, but I wasn't sure if I was right on that.
So if you were looking for a place to put a safe house, blend in, be anonymous, do you think having a house near Terlingua, Texas is a good place to go?
I mean, you're what, one of seven houses?
Right.
And it seems like it would be really easy to find. You would know everyone.
Right.
You would know everyone in your town.
And if there were like 20 random Mexican people who showed up and all went to the same house, everyone would notice, right? So why would coyotes even bring them there?
Yeah.
And why are there so many working deputies at the sheriff's office when there are literally, what is the ratio of deputies to citizens in Terlingua, Texas? Like 1 to 20? There's a lot of deputies, right?
Yeah. Terlingua, Texas was the site of the first famous championship chili cook-off in 1967, in case you were wondering. And over 10,000 chili fans come there from all over the world the first Saturday of every November.
Wow, we just missed it. Maybe that's why they go there. Maybe they only bring people into the safe houses on the first Saturday of November when the town swells to 1,000 times its normal size.
That's the only thing that makes any sense.
You know, I don't understand when Criminal Minds writers write these
episodes. Pick a different place, right?
It's so easy to Google the location. So why wouldn't you pick a place that makes sense? Like, Terlingua is known for being a freaking ghost town.
I'm trying to find.
I don't understand. Why wouldn't you just pick somewhere else that's near the border?
Oh, it's right by Big Bend.
So why wouldn't they?
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's probably no big cities like right on the border. So you'd have to, like, make your way into Marfa?
Marfa's not big either, though. That's,
I've heard of Marfa. It's got to be bigger than Terlingua.
I doubt much bigger. Let's see. Oh, the population of Marfa is 1,750 people.
Well, there we go.
So you'd for sure blend in Marfa.
Texas is such a funny state. It's like, yeah, you got to make it to the next big city, which is San Antonio, which is 4,000 miles away.
The only reason anyone's heard of Marfa is because of the Prada in Marfa that Beyonce took her picture in front of. You know that art installation, Prada in Marfa? It's like in the desert.
Yes.
Anyway, now we're just talking about the population of small Texas border towns.
In Texas. Anyway, that's how boring this episode is.
If you're still listening, we do have more episode to discuss. Yeah.
So anyway, they're like, don't worry, we've got a Garcia.
Yeah.
So they tell her first, they're like, call her and they're like, we need you to look for safe houses mm-hmm. for undocumented immigrants in
and
this
she's
town.
Like, sure.
And she like,
she's
at first,
like, I can do that.
She's like, sure. And I was about to get really mad, but then she says, what are the parameters? And they're like, short-term rentals with occupants with criminal histories and higher than expected utility usage. And I was like, okay, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I'll give this one to them.
So the deputy and Morgan and Prentice raid a safe house. Morgan gets in a really good tackle. Like he tries to run out the door and Morgan just puts his arm out and he clotheslines him.
And Prentice practically starts applauding. Like she's loving it.
And yeah, then he like says what football position he played, which I don't remember what it was
either.
But she was like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I know enough to know that that's a football. So anyway, it's kind of sad because he has this giant gun. He doesn't even get to use it at all.
He doesn't need to. He's got two guns already.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was so lame. But this episode sucks.
Well, while Sarah sees her way out.
No one's still listening anyway. We just spent 10 minutes discussing the population of Texas.
So they find people locked up in the barn, including a little boy and a woman who's clearly been assaulted.
God,
it's awful.
Woman,
And they actually call an ambulance for her.
Yeah, which is nice. I love to...
I feel like ever since Morgan took on more of a leadership role on this team, we're calling the ambulance more often.
That's good. That's a good point. Need someone more empathetic in charge.
Yeah.
I loved that Prentice whipped out her Spanish. Like I assume the guy is supposed to be the coyote.
Yeah.
And he pretends he doesn't speak English and she just goes right into flawless Spanish. And you can see on his face, he's like, oh shit.
I know. I didn't catch most of the conversation though, because I always watch this with the captions on so I can catch it. Mm-hmm. And every time, because it had the the subtitles of what they were saying to each other, but over top of it, the caption just said speaking Spanish. And I was like, oh my God. It was making me so mad because I couldn't read it. And also, I didn't care enough to go back and read it.
No, nothing about this episode is worth rewinding for. I guess, is it still called rewinding?
I don't know.
I feel like a dinosaur. What do you call it now that there's no tape involved?
Yeah. The woman and the boy are the family of the dead man whose head was left on the fence. The woman said that her husband had been ill and couldn't keep up and told them to go on without him. Mm-hmm. The boy keeps saying he saw the sun and they keep telling him to be quiet because it was night. And they're like, you mean the moon? And he's like, no, the sun. And they're like, shh, it was nighttime. Yeah. They're like, maybe listen to this kid.
Right.
And he's old enough
to know what he saw.
He's old enough to know what he saw. And for them to say, what do you mean? It's not like this kid is three.
Right.
Like if you would have said, oh, it's nighttime. What do you mean you saw the sun? He would have been like a large sun painted on the side of a barn.
Yeah.
But they don't. They just shut him down and ignore him.
Or I thought it could have been like he saw the headlight of the SUV or something. And it seemed like sunlight.
That's what I assumed he was talking about.
But it wasn't. It was the painting.
But he was talking about the painting. But nobody bothers to ask him what he was talking about.
Look, if we ask follow-up questions, how will we get a full hour out of these episodes?
That's true. One of the other deputies, Boyd, who is played by longtime SVU forensic tech, Mike O'Halloran, is like, oh my God, I think this boy might be talking about a mural on the side of a barn. Mm. And they're like, oh man, we should go check this out. And you're like, did you ask him? He's right there. Ask him, did you mean you saw the actual sun or did you see a painting?
No, Emily, impossible.
Yeah. So he and Ruiz head out there together. Ruiz says that she's never been out there before. And Boyd's like, oh, I used to ride ATVs out here all the time when I was a kid. And you're like oh,
uh-oh.
No.
Uh-oh. Yeah. She was like getting ready to leave too. Like she was just leaving for the night and he stops her. And so.
And he's like outside the police station.
Yeah. So
nobody sees
them
inside.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I think I know what they're talking about. Come with me. And she's like, okay.
Okay. And you're like, oh no, no.
This is.
Come on. How many dumb decisions can people make all at once?
So Ruiz compliments his police work and he asks her about the profile and says that he disagrees that the man they're looking for is a coward. And then he starts complaining that his leg was hurting. and is like, then starts limping. He was not limping before.
He has not limped one time, but it's like.
And nobody's ever noticed.
Must be about to rain because now I got this pain in my leg or something.
Like, what are you, 80? Right. Also, you're in the desert. It's not going to rain. he says, then she like has this realization that he is the killer. Mm-hmm. He says that things were going fine before she showed up and started sticking her nose where it doesn't belong.
So how long has she been working there? Like he must've been killing people for years.
Right? Yeah. Cause I think she hasn't been there that long. Cause she was saying that like, she's been investigating the murders for like 6 months and she like caught onto it shortly after she got there.
Yeah. So probably less than a year, but he's had to have been killing people for years, right?
Yeah. So she reaches for her gun and he says, you know, you won't make it. And she says, I have to try. So then
a bunch
we just
of gunshots and they cliffhanger us with the commercial break.
We just
like,
hear the gunshots. So the team arrives to the police station the next morning. And everybody is like in shambles because Ruiz is missing. And then Boyd calls in to say that he has found her, which no one finds suspicious at all.
Nope. And I really wanted her to get at least one shot off first.
I know. I was mad that she died because we so rarely get a competent local law enforcement officer.
Especially a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the competent ones have more frequently been women than men.
Really?
But maybe I just notice it more.
Maybe. I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. They point out that she is not his usual victim at all. And Hotch says that this murder, like the body that they found was exactly what Omar said that he would do to a victim. So you can only imagine the state that this body must be in.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Mm-hmm. But he says it doesn't make any sense for Omar to kill the only person in town, that doesn't think he's responsible for these murders, but he's like, but I was the only person in there. It was just like the sheriff and me and Omar. Nobody else could have heard it. Mm-hmm. And then JJ like walks over and she's like, oh, hey, this is exactly what they said. Like Omar said he would do to a victim. And Hotch is like, what?
How did you know that?
And she explains that there was like a speaker in the room. So everyone in the police station could hear everything they were saying, but specifically Boyd was
turned
right
on.
There with her. Yeah. So Boyd and the other deputy Gentry, who was the one that was just being a dick earlier.
Being like, a racist asshole.
Yeah. Don't like you.
Nope.
They've gone out to go pick up Omar. They're like at a garage.
Yeah.
Or like a
salvage yard or
salvage yards. Yeah. I don't know. But Boyd gets like right out and shoots a man with a shotgun immediately.
Yeah.
And it produces the most blood I've ever seen. Did you notice that? He gets like one shot with the shotgun and the man just like leaves this giant blood streak as he falls down. I'm like, I've never shot anything with a shotgun, but like, I mean, like if you go out and kill it, I guess you don't use a shotgun for deer, right?
No, you use a rifle.
Yeah.
A shotgun, because a shotgun has all the little pellets in it, right? So it just, like,
oh, so I guess maybe it would.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just like the whole wall.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's just a giant smear.
It's a
blood.
Lot for criminal minds. They usually shy away from the details.
But yeah, he walks in, shoots two more guys on the way up, and Gentry's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, this is a bit much. Uh-huh. And Boyd is like, well, I had to because he killed two cops. And then he just pulls out a gun and shoots Gentry too.
Yeah. Like, man, Boyd is on a rampage, and there's only 110 people around.
Yeah.
People better hide out.
So Gentry's phone rings and Boyd answers and he's like, Gentry here? They're like, nothing suspicious. And Francis is like, okay, don't say anything if you're around Boyd, but he's actually the killer. And Boyd hangs up on her and then he smashes the phone.
On both sides. Like, first of all, this is a person who's been getting away with killing people for years.
Yeah.
Suddenly spirals out of control now that the BAU is there. And then the BAU shows up, acts like total amateurs, tells the killer they know he's the killer. I just, like, what? It's insanity.
Yeah.
Nothing has been happening for like 45 minutes. And now in the last few minutes, they're just like,
yeah,
I'll pull all the stops.
Yeah. It's like, the end of a Michael Bay movie, right? When everything just starts exploding.
How is everyone so dumb? This is so dumb. Yeah.
So the team arrives. They find all the bodies everywhere. Mm-hmm. Hotch calls Garcia to track Boyd's police cruiser. Mm-hmm. He is out in the desert, and he tells Hotch to come find him. So then the team gets to Boyd's trailer, which apparently smells very bad.
Yeah, it's a pretty sad-looking trailer.
Yeah. There's a pile of bloody clothes in like the closet or bathroom or something.
The shower, maybe?
The shower.
It's hard to tell.
And Morgan's like, this must be where he decapitated the bodies. And you're like, what? Why?
Why would he take them inside? Unbury a body. It's a remote trailer. It's not like it's a trailer park or something. There's no one in sight. So he's going to drag a rotting corpse into his single shower. Does he just stand up with it in the shower?
And then decapitate it with a machete?
If the body was already dead, how much blood? Like, it's not like they just died. They've been dead a while. How messy is that?
I don't know, but why would you bother?
It's... I don't know.
Now, if you thought that decapitating a body was difficult... Imagine doing it in a single shower stall.
In your hot desert trailer.
It doesn't make any sense. Why? Why would you do that? Like, just stick the body up and cut the head off.
Because then does he drag the body's not still in there. Does he drag the body back out then and rebury the body?
Yes, because there's no bodies. Just the bloody clothes. Why would you take the clothes off?
Was it his bloody clothes? Does he get blood all over him from doing the decapitation? There's more questions than answers.
I don't know.
Why are we even in this trailer? We know where he is.
They're like, we got to figure out. Let's get to the trailer so we can figure out where he's going. And you're like, you're literally tracking him.
It's because the too many of them, they couldn't be not talking in the car because we know they can't talk to each other in the car. So if they're all on the chase, then what do they talk about for the episode?
They're in silence.
I would have rather watched them sit in silence in real time driving to catch up with Boyd
than this scene
that doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, Reed also finds a wall of articles about the Golden Harvest Feed Company, the one from the mural with the sun. Mm-hmm. Being found negligent, resulting in Boyd's father's death. And they're like this explains anything.
His dad owned the company, and then they were prosecuted for gross negligence, and his dad killed himself, or his dad, right? Like, his family owned the business, I felt like.
Maybe. I don't know. And they're like, oh, well, this explains everything. They're like, this explains nothing. Why is he doing this?
Nothing has been explained from top to bottom in this episode.
Oh, my God. So then once Boyd gets to where he, gets to where he's going to this barn, then he shoots the radio so they can't track him anymore.
Right.
Once he's already gotten to the location and they've fully tracked him there.
Yeah.
So Rossi and Hot, plus it's the only thing out there.
Right. Yeah.
Again, like, well, there's only one thing on this road. So where could he possibly be going? Town,
yeah. So there's only so many places to hide.
Rossi and Hotch arrive and Boyd starts shooting with a machine gun. Like, he's shooting so fast.
Apparently he just keeps a machine gun in
just
this old
Tommy
barn.
Gun yeah. in an old barn. He drives out on his ATV and
shooting wildly.
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, so Rossi and Hotch get there, and Rossi pulls out the gun, and Hotch is like, don't deafen me. Yes. Like, those are the words he uses.
Yes.
Not, don't shoot that fucking thing in this car, which is what you would say to someone. He says, don't deafen me. Which, and to be fair, he's been deafened before.
Right, that's what I was going to say. We know he's never really let those eardrums heal, so.
That's true. So he comes out on his ATV, and Morgan, who's sitting in the passenger seat, just starts shooting through the windshield.
I was like, there's no way that's protocol.
Just lean out the window.
Right. There's no way. There's no way.
Lean out the window. That's so dangerous.
Law enforcement officer and would it's not, do that.
It's not like the handgun. It's like
it's
the
like that big ridiculous
the
gun
ass,
on the plane.
Giant army gun that he has.
And there's no reason for it.
No. And then Prentice yells at him, and he's like, he was coming right for us. What was I supposed to do? And you're like, you had so many options, sir.
Right.
So many options.
And Prentice says to him, like, I got it, or something. Like, she's steering
them. Also, you know what else you could have done? run him over.
Right.
Let him come at you. Yeah. Just keep going. Right. That giant ass SUV that they drive right. versus a four-wheeler.
Yeah. I would be pissed too if I was Prentice.
Yeah.
She's and he's like, just, I did you a favor. Like, you did not,
No,
sir.
You did not.
You acted like an idiot. There
that was so dangerous.
No way an FBI agent would do something that dumb.
No, you'd get in so much trouble.
Yeah.
So anyway, they find like all the bodies buried everywhere. Yeah, there's tons of bodies out here.
Yeah, the team's taking it really hard too. Yeah.
And Hotch says that he's going to call the detectives he knows in Brooklyn, which I can only hope is the 99 squad, so that they can honor Ruiz's shield.
Like, let me call Jake Peralta.
Exactly. Corral, the advocate guy, is going to help ID all the victims mm-hmm. and like talk to the people he knows and everything. And with that, the team heads home.
Man.
And we get our other quote. Many persons have the wrong idea of what constitutes true happiness. It is not obtained through self-gratification, but through fidelity to a worthy purpose. Mm. Helen Keller.
From the Bugs Bunny animator
Chuck
to
Jones
Helen
to Helen Keller.
Really bookending this episode here.
Yes.
Well, I'll start with statistics. We are now 20-5 for white men in season 5, bringing us to an even 80-20 as far as white men go. Overall, 104-22. You're not going to believe this. 82.5%
white men,
which I think would round up to 83% white men overall. Now, how would you rate this miraculous profile that they just, I don't know.
I want to give
gathered
it
from the air as far as accuracy, helpfulness, and plausibility.
I mean, pretty accurate.
Sure.
Not super helpful.
No, plausible, sure.
But it's not plausible that they would have come up with that profile from the information that they had.
They had no information.
They had no information.
I know.
So I would say it's not plausible for them to have come up with it.
Yeah.
Even though
it
was
accurate.
And that's
what makes me mad about the profiles. Yeah. Whenever they just make stuff up out of thin air, at least do a little bit of research. Like going to the ME, like you said, they only have the heads. If they had the whole bodies and the lungs were covered in dust and stuff too, I get it. But you've only got the heads and you're just deciding it must be from running. How? How are you making this?
Yeah.
If you were the ME, wouldn't you be like, we can't determine that? That seems like a stretch to me.
Well, and then also their whole profile, like, it's all like, well, it's power and it's all this stuff. And like, it's fucking racism.
Yeah.
He's a fucking racist.
Right.
That's why he was doing this. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like Mexicans.
Yeah. Yeah.
That didn't make it in anywhere. No. They weren't like, this person is driven by, and like all of it doesn't make any sense. Like the whole power thing, like this yeah. isn't power. He's just a vigilante who is taking right. this nonsense into his own hands.
Right. Yes. And I'll give it a 4.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
No.
How about our Hotch Watch? Would you give or take anything from Hotch after his cartel standoff or anything else that he did?
He didn't really do anything.
No. There's not a lot of outside the job of the BAU on this one. They're very consumed with this yeah. case. So, well.
There's no fun bonding scenes of them just hanging out in Terlingua, Texas, eating chili.
Not a lot to do.
It's my favorite thing I've learned about Terlingua, Texas.
They're
now.
Not there on the right weekend in November. They yeah. must have just missed it. The next episode is 1,000 Words. Do I remember this?
I don't. I read the description. And it was something about like tattoos. And I was like, are they going to do a memento? I don't want that. Nobody wants to see that.
I don't want that. Yeah, I don't remember. Well, I guess we're all about to find out. Wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram at The Unsub Is A White Man. You can find us on TikTok under the same name. Our merch is on Redbubble. They make great holiday gifts, no matter what winter holiday you celebrate.
Yeah, and they're having lots of great sales.
Yeah,
right now,
yeah. We'll celebrate the new year with a $6 bottle of wine we can split from the profits should anyone get themselves some gifts.
Yes.
But if you get anything, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be eating chili.